friends. Welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. The website is weekendinterviewshow.com. And it's my honor to welcome back to the show Elaine Castle. Elaine?
Hi.
How are you doing?
Good. How about you?
I'm doing pretty good. Long time no talk to.
Yep.
And we got big news here. It turns out Padilla gets a trial after all, it seems like.
Yep, he is. And if you read the indictment, it's not related to anything that he's been charged with being involved in for the past 3 years. And like so many of these indictments, including the one that was Ahmed Abu Ali, was just convicted of in Alexandria, I heard one a lawyer friend of mine this week refer to it as a conspiracy to conspire. No evidence of any real action taken on the part of any of these people, and very loosely connected now, as it turns out, Padilla, to some charities, some Islamic charities that the administration has been after and shutting down since September the 11th. So it's not much of an indictment. It's a lot of vague, allegations, but no doubt a jury will convict them.
Well, no wonder they turned him over to the Navy if they have nothing on him.
It's correct. And, it just shows you that, and Gonzalez wouldn't answer the questions. I'm not going to talk about that, the dirty bomb plots or the plots of Lloyd Bridges or to torch apartment buildings in New York. I read a story that had reminded me way back. Paul Wolfowitz commented on him, on Padilla, and said nothing but kind of a thug, talking, running off at the mouth.
Right.
And again, because they had to file a brief, and I guess they feared that the Supreme Court was going to order them to produce him for a trial, which I don't necessarily think the Supreme Court would have done. I don't know why the government just kind of folded so quickly and said, we'll ship him down to Miami. But that seems to be, the reason why they did it this time. And now they're going to ask the Supreme Court not to hear the case because they don't want a decision that would, bind them in the future. So they're hoping to sidestep a Supreme Court ruling.
Right. Yeah, that I have to say, it's funny to see them scared of the Supreme Court hearing the case. That's what I was scared of. The Supreme Court was going to hear the case and say, yeah, do what you like with him.
Well,
we don't care.
Yeah, and I think given the Chief Justice Roberts there and what he did in the case that came down from Guantanamo, which the Supreme Court is going to hear on appeal. I mean, he's not going to put any constraints on the president. I mean, that is a man who's, all federal all the time.
Right. He's the guy who, I believe, the day after being interviewed for a Supreme Court job, handed down the decision saying you can call anybody you want an enemy combatant and
absolutely.
You can have military trials at Guantanamo.
And ignored the Supreme Court's ruling in the Hamdi case, and this is the case Hamdan at Guantanamo. So the Hamdan case came out of the Supreme Court's ruling that said Guantanamo detainees had the right to petition the court for, habeas corpus. And Hamdan, as some of these detainees then tried to, got some lawyers here, a lot of high-powered law firms offering their services. And the Hamdan case was the first one to get into the D.C. court, federal court. And the D.C. federal court, was prepared to let the case be heard, and then it went up to the circuit, the Court of Appeals in D.C. with Judge Roberts, and the decision was, heck no! He didn't get anything. Just totally ignoring the Supreme Court's decision.
Yeah, and the day after Bush interviewed him for the job of Associate Justice.
And never was disclosed.
Yeah.
Never was disclosed.
All right, everybody. We're talking with Elaine Castle. She's the author of the book, The War on Civil Liberties, How Bush, Ashcroft, and now Gonzalez have dismantled the Bill of Rights. We'll be right back. My friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. I'm Scott Horton. I'm talking with Elaine Castle. She's the author of the book, The War on Civil Liberties, How Bush and Ashcroft Have Dismantled the Bill of Rights. You can occasionally find her articles at Counterpunch, and also she has a blog called Civil Liberties Watch, The War at Home, available at City Pages. And also you write for Fine Law, too, don't you?
Yes.
And also at Fine Law. All right, so here's the deal. June 10th, 2002. John Ashcroft, the Attorney General of the United States, from Moscow, fittingly, announced that they had arrested a guy named, whatever his new name is, Jose Padilla, in a plot to bomb Americans with a dirty bomb, that is a conventional bomb laced with radioactive material. And when the judge said, wow, that's a hell of a thing, well, bring him before me, they said, sorry, we already turned him over to the Navy.
That's correct.
And as you say, this is really, we can basically presume this is because, as Paul Wolfowitz admitted, this guy was innocent. That's why they turned him over to the Navy, was so they wouldn't have to admit right away that John Ashcroft was such a liar.
Exactly. I mean, otherwise he would have been produced for trial a long time ago. So that was the, and even when he was first brought to New York, by the way, he was held on a material witness warrant.
Right.
He was never charged, but the judge did appoint an attorney who said, you know, he doesn't have to be held, give him bond. And it was before that hearing that he disappeared and had been made an enemy combatant in the dark of night and removed from Manhattan and taken to Charleston, South Carolina. And, of course, the reason they brought him to Charleston, South Carolina is that so that any judicial proceedings would be heard by the Fourth Circuit Court of Appeals in Richmond, which is, you know, to the right of the Supreme Court, and the court that was involved in the Hamdi case. So, you know, there was such a method to their, you know, to their madness to remove him, not just to a federal facility or a military facility in New York, but they brought him to South Carolina, which I just think is hilarious.
Well, let's be clear about this. This is an American citizen arrested on American soil.
In the United States. And actually, keep in mind, he wasn't arrested. When he was on the material witness warrant is called a detention, where they say, we have to keep you locked up because we're afraid you might not talk to the grand jury, you might flee. So it was an investigation, supposedly, that was going to take place into a plot to detonate a dirty bomb. Then as an enemy combatant, he's not charged, he's not arrested with anything. He's said to be, you know, maybe planning to, you know, be a member of Al-Qaeda or supporting Al-Qaeda, supporting the enemy, whoever that is at any given time. Now he has been charged and arrested. So it's the first time, and what has happened is, aside from his, you know, an attorney was appointed from him, but the attorney has had very little contact with him. But think about another thing that people don't often think about is your right to a speedy trial after you've been arrested. 6 months. It has to be no more than 6 months before you have a trial in federal court. Well, the purpose of that is, you know, to protect you from being detained for a long period of time when you might be innocent, but also so that you can have access to witnesses and the evidence against you. So think about what that means in terms of 3 years, probably 4 years by the time this case ever gets to trial. So that is another right, and of course the right to bail. As soon as they call you a terrorist, you don't have any rights to bail anymore, so your Eighth Amendment right is gone there. So there's so many violations of the traditional expected rights of a criminal defendant that it turns everything that I learned in law school absolutely upside down. And to think that one president, one administration can do this, when never in the history of the United States has this happened, is truly, it's just despicable.
Well, know? Lincoln did it.
Lincoln did it, but he suspended habeas corpus during when there was a war on American soil. I mean, so arguably under the Constitution, even though, you know, the question is, did he have the right to do it if Congress didn't vote it? But he actually suspended the writ of habeas corpus. What Bush is doing is, you know, one defendant at a time, because obviously they're not going to get away with it. Although the Congress last week seems to be prepared, the Senate at least, to vote overwhelmingly to deny habeas corpus rights to enemy combatants, anybody who's named enemy combatant. So now, would that be constitutional? Can Congress write a law saying that a whole class of people have no right to habeas corpus? Boy, that is a scary thing, which shows you the Congress is continuing to be complicit with the administration and giving it pretty much whatever it wants.
Now, in reading the indictment, it basically sounds like Padilla was the least of four or five guys who were involved in a conspiracy, assuming we can believe a word in the indictment,
right,
involved in a conspiracy to, finance, not necessarily do anything violent themselves,
money,
but to finance jihadists in Chechnya and Kosovo,
right,
and Somalia.
Bosnia,
and
right.
Okay, so I don't understand why they didn't just, why was he not just a part of this indictment all along?
Well, you know, they think really what they're thinking is that they figured out a way to throw him into this indictment and loosely connect them with them because they feared the Supreme Court's decision. So it was.
So he didn't even really belong in that indictment at all.
No, because I heard his attorney argue on one of the news shows of this week. She said, why didn't they indict him a year ago? I mean, you know, because the government was saying, oh, it has nothing to do with the fact that our briefs are due Monday. She said, well, this indictment's been sitting down there in Miami with these other guys for a year. Why didn't they indict him a year ago? And so, I mean, it just shows you the games that they're playing. But you know, let me just sort of fast forward to what I see as the bigger issue here, both with him and with the Alexandria case we can talk about if you want to. And that is that the government, you know, they're going to realize they made a mistake by publicizing this, right? By, you know, Ashcroft getting up there, as you say, from Moscow and, you know, running off his mouth. What's going to happen now is you're not going to even know about these people, okay? They're going to be kidnapped either abroad already, like Abu Ali was in Saudi Arabia, and he was kept in prison there for 2 years before he was brought back here, and he was only brought back here because his parents sued the federal government to find out his whereabouts. But in the future, I think people are going to be kidnapped from the United States by the CIA and taken abroad and imprisoned, or imprisoned abroad because you're already there on travel or studying or whatever, and you're never going to hear from them again. So what I say about Padilla and Abu Ali is, we happen to know about them, but I don't think the government's going to make this mistake in the future, and it's going to be done surreptitiously. That is why Cheney and Bush are fighting so hard to make sure that the Senate does not put any limitations on the CIA in terms of kidnapping and interrogating and torturing people. So I can tell you that I don't think there are going to be a lot more Padillas and Abu Alis. We're not going to know about them.
That's cool. I'm going to be in a former Soviet gulag with all my favorite writers.
Yeah, and we're not even going to know you're there because they're not. I'm telling you, they're not going to make that mistake again. You know, in the case of Abu Ali, they had the State Department actually got involved and let his parents know that he was in a Saudi prison. That's because the CIA was not involved in that case. The CIA was not involved in either of these cases, all right? You know, this was the FBI's doing. So, obviously, the idea, in my mind, you know, my theory is that they will turn this stuff over or say that the CIA is operating, and you know that the CIA largely operates outside of any law and accountability to no one. And that's what I think the future is going to be. So, and you're not going to know about it. It's going to be like Central America, South America, and absolutely, we already have the gulags. I mean, we talked about gulags, you know, probably a year ago on your show, right?
Yeah.
Now we know they're out there now. Isn't that amazing? You know?
Yep.
Yeah. They're truly there, and you know, they might be in some Eastern European countries. Maybe the EU will get a hold of this. I understand that the European Union has given some countries, I think, like 60 days to disclose whether or not they are operating, you know, CIA prisons in those countries. It's a violation of the EU treaties.
Yeah, and I think the Human Rights Watch has already identified Poland and Romania as two places where literally, former Soviet gulags have been reopened under American management.
Incredible. Right, I like that, under new management.
But, I mean, doesn't it say in the Constitution, Elaine, that the president can write up a finding in which he makes a determination and that then you're an unperson and you don't have rights anymore? Isn't that in the Constitution?
I guess so. The
Commander-in-Chief clause?
We better get that out. You know, especially, you know, if your name is, you know, George Bush, I think you can do most anything you want to. I mean, the point is the courts have been slow to pick up and protect, and the protections of the courts in these cases, I mean, remember in Padilla, in the district court, you had him, he was treated by the trial judge, just like Hamdi. The judge said, charge him or release him. But once you get to the appellate court level, which is now, what, 65-70% of Republican appointee nominees, that's where you see you don't have any rights. And then you get to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court may, well, we might give you something. We might let you walk in the courthouse door, but then, you know, then we're not going to give you anything. That's pretty much what Roberts did in the Hamdan case. Okay, you filed your suit, okay? You filed your suit. But now that you filed your suit, we can say that the president can do anything he wants with
right.
you.
Right, back to Guantanamo with you.
There's no substance to that. There's no substance to that protection. Exactly, back to Guantanamo for you. So, I mean, I just think that if the administration's learned anything from this, it's going to be that no more is this going to be in the public eye. So then, you know.
Well, you're definitely right that everything that they have done in the public eye has been an absolute disaster.
It has been a disaster.
The paintball case, the Detroit sleeper cell.
Exactly. Which case is now, you know, I also think it's kind of a riot to say the Justice Department is investigating that case now.
Anytime the Justice Department is looking at indicting one of their own prosecutors, you have to wonder.
I think that it's probably upside down. I think that prosecutor is being indicted for blowing the whistle on Ashcroft. Because I don't think that this prosecutor on his own did everything that was done in that Detroit cell case.
Well, let's remind people, Elaine,
the bottom of it.
Elaine, let's remind the audience that they convicted, it was five guys, right, and they were all set free because the FBI perjured themselves on the stand.
It took the judge a long time to decide, and I read this week that the judge made several trips of his own to view FBI files and determined on his own that, you know, the FBI had lied in his court, and he wasn't happy about it. So he released them.
And only the prosecutor, not the perjuring FBI agents, are under investigation now,
right?
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and I think the prosecutor is being made to take the hit because I think that he was actually doing what Ashcroft... These prosecutors don't act alone.
Right. All right, we'll be right back, everybody. It's Elaine Castle on the Weekend Interview Show. Friends, welcome back to the Weekend Interview Show. Wrapping up here real quick with Elaine Castle and I should tell you real quick, she's the author of a great book called The War on Civil Liberties, How Bush and Ashcroft Have Dismantled the Bill of Rights. She has a blog called Civil Liberties Watch, The War at Home, and also writes for FineLaw.com. And Elaine, I'm sitting here looking at the headlines on antiwar.com during the commercial break, and I see this headline from the Turkish press. Envoy, U.S. ran Gitmo-style prison in Kosovo. And this witness is talking about in 2002 seeing a Camp Delta-style razor wire fortress in Kosovo. So apparently this kind of thing has been going on for quite some time.
Yeah, I think that we know that this started probably in 2002. Exactly. I think that's what the Washington Post reported. And they're expanding.
Now, I have to tell you, my heart was broken today when I was checking up on the case of Abu Ali, the guy who was convicted last week or 2 weeks ago on a confession that he maintains was tortured out of him in Saudi Arabia. And I found that it was Paul McNulty, the prosecutor who's going after the neocons spying for Israel in the Pentagon, is the same guy running this case.
Mm-hmm.
And he's now the guy that Bush has just promoted to deputy attorney general.
Yeah, he'll be number two. He'll be number two in the Justice Department.
Yeah, great.
And
it makes me wonder why he went after Larry Franklin at all, this guy.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the kind of thing when you know that, I mean, you know, the United States is in bed with Israel to start with, and you've got one of the highest level lobbyists, you know, that organization, AIPAC, and it just makes you wonder things like that about why that's being prosecuted. Something is not what it appears to be there, because that doesn't even make any sense to me. I mean, you know, we give Israel whatever we want. You know, I don't get that. That you know, some things I can't understand. But McNulty has made a reputation for being, you know, for pushing it right to the edge and playing real hardball tactics. And, of course, so far the juries are buying it. But he's one that showed a change in culture with prosecutors under Ashcroft. I mean, because Ashcroft put him there. And it was when, you know, it used to be that defense attorneys like myself had a lot of respect for federal prosecutors. And they still do have a lot of respect for some of them. But this guy really, really pushes it in the types of charges that he's, you know, made out of very flimsy facts, and they stick to the jurors because, listen, you know, these Arab American men, they don't have a prayer with juries. They just don't. It's you know, and I think that it's almost impossible for them to have a fair trial, to have an impartial jury.
Oh, well, so what do we do then? We can't call them enemy combatants.
Well, I mean, I think that they're just not going to. I think they're just not going to bring them home. If there's anyone that they don't want to, that they don't want here, that the government doesn't want here, I think they're just going to take them away. You know, I think that they're not going to. You know, although it makes you think they might try another Abu Ali, because the judge gave them everything they wanted. The judge said, I mean, the hysterical part. You know, the FBI was traveling frequently to see Abu Ali. You understand, the FBI agents from Alexandria were going. But they were not asking him the questions. They were telling the Saudis to ask him questions, and they were behind a two-way mirror. Now, what that enabled the judge, very disappointing because, to me, because the judge used to be a defense attorney in Northern Virginia, and I would have thought he would have been somewhat sympathetic, and because the FBI wasn't doing the questioning, and because he was being held in a Saudi prison, he had no right to a lawyer. He had no right against self-incrimination. And according to the judge, he had no speedy trial rights because, are you ready for this? He was never a suspect.
Oh.
Now, when did he become a suspect?
I don't know.
He became a suspect when the weekend when the judge in the D.C. was trying to decide whether, after it changed its story several times, the government at first said, when the parents sued for Abu Ali to bring him home, the government at first denied they even knew him. Can you imagine that?
Yeah.
And, of course, the parents were pulling out the, you know, State Department emails, and, well, that lasted about a day. And every day they changed their story. And finally they said, okay, we got him. They're holding him in Saudi Arabia. You know, he's so dangerous, we can't bring him home. But we can't tell the lawyer. We can't say in open court. But we'll tell you, Judge. We'll tell you. And while the judge was deciding over the weekend whether he was going to hear that secret evidence, Abu Ali appeared in Alexandria. This was Washington birthday weekend, and I'll never forget it because I was sitting at my computer, and his sister sent me an email and said, he's coming home tomorrow. And I go, oh, well, I wasn't excited. She was. I said, well, where's he going to be? She said, he's going to be in federal court in Alexandria. And I said, oh, my gosh.
Okay, he wasn't a suspect, so he didn't have a right to a speedy trial. And he was in Saudi Arabia, so he didn't have a right to a lawyer.
Right.
While the Saudis are torturing confessions out of him, and the FBI is overseeing it all. But then all of this evidence is still admissible against
all
him in court.
All of it was admissible. The judge did not accept it. The judge said he had no rights. And let me tell you, the judge wrote a 113-page opinion, the judge wrote. And in it, it's all in great detail. So if you go to one of my articles, like in Fine Law, I have a link to it. And you will read in great detail what the Saudis did. Look, the Saudis admitted that they questioned him all through the night on many nights. They said they did it at night so that because it was too hot in the day. What, they don't have air conditioning in Saudi Arabia? Give me a break. And so they would start questioning him at 8 o'clock at night and question until 6 o'clock in the morning. No, that's not sleep deprivation, the judge said. They were doing it so it would be cooler at night. Now that's the kind of, you know, you read that.
We're up against the time wall, Elaine.
Shackled and chained.
We're out of time, Elaine. Everybody look at Civil Liberties Watch, The War at Home.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.